From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This is not homeschooling, it's crisis teaching, is how one New Hampshire educator describes the remote learning environment kids and teachers have been engaged in for the past month, and now will be for the rest of the academic year. Today in The Exchange, it's a two-part special on remote learning. First hour, we focus on kindergarten through high school, then college students, how they and higher education leaders are trying to adapt to all the disruptions and uncertainty. Let's hear from you first as we look at elementary, middle, and high school age children. If you're a student yourself, or a parent, or a teacher, what's your impression of remote learning? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests. Liz Kerwin is with us. She's an English learner teacher at Manchester West High School. Also, Martha Dalrymple, fourth grade teacher at Deerfield Community School. And Eric Chase, principal at Woodsville High School. And we will take your calls as well throughout the hour. 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, I want to ask you all to just give a grade to remote learning so far, how it's going at your school, and then we'll definitely get into the details. And I know our listeners will have a lot to say as well. So Martha, you first, again, fourth grade teacher. How's it going for you?
I'd say it's going B plus level. It's going pretty well for me, all things considered. We are running with the flow and we have to be flexible in order to deal with the new waves. But I think my students are very flexible. The families have been really responsive and letting me know what's working and what's not, which is really important to all of this. And as teachers, we're always learning and looking for better ways to do things as is. So it's in our nature to respond to situations the best we can and try and make it positive.
Wow. B plus, that's actually not bad given all the challenges of, you know, reaching kids technically and physically and so forth. How about you, Liz?
Yeah, I can mirror what Martha said. I definitely feel that at my school, we are also functioning at a high B plus, where we were able to respond to remote learning pretty quickly. And all of our teachers were, you know, willing to do additional professional development in order to understand how to roll out learning online and to utilize different platforms. And we've also been working really hard to connect with our students and our families and, you know, utilizing new advisory models in order to make sure that we're connecting with every student and no one is falling through the cracks. So I think that it's been good in that perspective, where we're really coming together as a community.
So, Eric, how about you? What are your teachers telling you that, you know, how they're feeling about this, and what grade would you give this whole experiment?
Well, I think I'd be on the solid B-plus line. I might even bump it up to an A-minus a little bit.
Wow.
The key point is to be able to connect with these kids every day, and my teachers are telling me, and we have a means of tracking, that we are, in fact, having contact with the kids on a daily basis. You know, if we don't hear from them for a couple of days, then we aggressively go out and try and find them again. But
really?
I think considering how little time there was to roll this out, it's gone remarkably well.
Well, everything has happened so fast. You're right. And what are your teachers telling you, Eric, that is most challenging for them?
Well, it's the complete change of delivery of instruction. You know, you're talking, some of my teachers have 30 years of experience, and all of a sudden there's this technological wall between them and the student. And all of those techniques that you picked up in terms of classroom management, in terms of delivering content, are now going through a completely new filter, which may or may not have a level of comfort with.
And do you have reasonable internet access, Eric, in Woodsville? I know that's been a concern, and we've heard from a lot of parents who say they do not have great internet access, and so online learning has been challenging. How about in Woodsville, Eric?
That's very true in Woodsville, particularly as you get to the outer areas of the community. You know, you may be last in the line of your cable company, and you get a lot of dropping out, and we try and deal with those students with analog materials, sending, you know,
Wow.
The superintendents also worked with the local cable companies to get internet into homes that didn't have it before at no charge to the family. So, but there are barriers, but they've been overcome rather regularly.
So, Liz, how about you and Martha, too? But, Liz, you first. What's the most challenging part of all this for you? I'm guessing you can relate to some of the things that Eric just said.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, I have a unique perspective because I specifically work with students and families who are learning English as their second or third or fourth language. And so, you know, the personal touch that we have in the classroom while we're working with students and helping to support them is so difficult to reproduce it through, you know, through remote learning. And so one of the things that have been the most difficult for me is just ensuring that I'm doing everything that I can in order to engage the students. You know, I'm working with students who have been in the United States for less than 1 month. And so I really need to be mindful of what I'm assigning for them and adapting so that they can engage within the curriculum.
Wow, Liz. So do these students who I'm so struck by what you just said, who've been in the United States for a very short time, do they even have the technical capacity to learn remotely?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we work really closely with our families when they enroll in school, and now even more so with remote learning, to ensure that they get in touch with Comcast, because Comcast offers the Internet Essentials program where students who have free and reduced lunch can get the internet for $10 at home. And so when we have families come in and if they qualify, we make sure that we connect them with that immediately. And so even students who have been here for a very short amount of time, we do our best to make sure they have the internet at home.
So, Martha, if you had to describe the biggest challenge for you with all this, what would that be?
I think, you know, engagement, technology are definitely some of the big players. But, you know, as a fourth grade teacher, so much of what we do is just the social connection and learning how to socially interact with each other. And I think the kids are really missing the most the social interaction with each other. On video chats, they'll say, you know, I miss hugging people in person. I don't want to see you over a video call. I want to see you in person. And all of the teachers completely agree. The hardest part of this is not seeing our students face to face.
Well, and I did want to ask all of you about the social and emotional side of this. And certainly the messaging that I'm getting from the Concord School District is they're concerned about that as well. Here's an email that we received from Susan last week. Susan says, it's been hard for my daughter to adjust to this, quote, routine. She dislikes it a lot and is having a hard time to finish some of the assignments. The first couple of weeks helped her to fall behind, and we're trying to catch up now. She has been consistently logging into the Google Classroom, but I have to supervise her, otherwise she won't do it consistently. I'm lucky I can work remotely and be able to have the flexibility to be here and help her when she needs it. This situation has also helped her to get depressed because she can't be with friends. Someday she doesn't want to leave her room. And I'm getting concerned about that. Susan says, by the way, she's 13 from the Portsmouth school system. So that's from Susan. And then just this morning we got an email from an anonymous listener who says, I have a high schooler in my home who went from 3 sports, honor society, gold scholar, straight A's to suicidal over virtual learning and isolation. Eric, these are heartbreaking, and we've heard other comments from listeners about just the emotional aspects of this for kids, and then they're so down they don't even want to do the work. What are you seeing, hearing, feeling in Woodsville, Eric?
Well, we're getting many of the same reports. I have had students calling in saying they're just too depressed to work. I've got both of my counselors calling out to kids every day, checking in with them. The school nurse is doing the same thing. And yeah, the isolation is really getting to the kids. Also, as we're now in week 3 or 4 of this, I can't recall, the motivation to do the work is starting to wane. Luckily, Woodsville High School is on a Vermont calendar, so we are actually on vacation this week. It's kind of hard to tell it's a vacation, just still sitting in your house, but at least they're getting a week off from doing any of this remote learning. I'm hoping that'll pull some of the pressure off.
How do the guidance counselors, when they call the kids, and I'm noting you only have 2, Eric, it doesn't sound like a lot, how do they sort of manage that emotional that sadness that just saps any motivation that the kids have to do their work?
I think it's just it's largely a question of reassuring them that we're going to get through this. This will at some point be over. It's we're in the weeds now, but they're going to come through. And by the way, I have 1 3/5 guidance counselors.
1 3/5. Okay, so yeah, even
one
less.
One of the positions is only 3 days a week, and she actually is a substance abuse counselor.
Wow. Wow. Martha, how about you? You mentioned that your fourth graders are also feeling sad. How are you helping them with that and, you know, trying to keep them on track with the academics?
I think the important thing is, yes, it's important to keep these kids' skills sharp and focus on academics. But right now, you can't learn if you're not emotionally ready for that. So making sure the kids are able to connect with each other, I ask them frequently, oh, are you still talking to your friends? Are you video calling your friends? When I will do one-on-one time with them, I try to have one-on-one video time with each kid once a week, and we'll play the Heads Up app over the video camera. And our school has put out, you know, physical education videos that are lots of fun that the kids normally only see at like jump rope for heart events. So I think we're trying to stay connected, and I've been inviting like the PE teacher, the art teacher, our music teachers specials to come to our virtual morning meetings. So the kids are still seeing some of those faces, and same for the adults as well.
Interesting. So you're, when you get online with them, you're bringing back sort of the favorite gym teacher, the favorite art teacher, so they can see that teacher as well. And that cheers them up.
Yeah.
What about you, Liz? Your students have a completely different set, I'm guessing, of, well, just where they're at. They just got here. They're learning English. What about their sort of social and emotional well-being? How are you tapping into that?
Yeah, I'm glad that you bring this up, because, you know, that is a need that transcends any language or culture. Everyone has our own social emotional needs that need to be met. And so I actually connected with a colleague, and we wanted to reframe the way that we are thinking about our curriculum, where it's very easy to update a PDF and have a static document that the kids have to read and fill in that can be adapted pretty easily for any language level. But that's not engaging them with their peers or on, you know, a basic needs level. And so we've decided to move forward and change the curriculum, where we're actually going to ask the students to engage with each other on the Google Classroom platform. And so we're hoping that by opening it up and having it become a dialogue, that they're going to be able to not only, you know, meet those needs, but then also increase their conversational skills. Because in English language learning, we're responsible for ensuring students understand reading, writing, listening, and speaking. And right now in remote learning, that speaking component is really hard to engage. And so we're trying to think of ways just to bring them together and even across the schools in Manchester so that they can engage with other peers at different school levels.
Oh, that's interesting. And I can imagine, Liz, that when an English learner is in a regular high school setting, you know, he or she is constantly hearing English all around them. So that kind of bolsters the work that you're doing in class. Mm-hmm. They're kind of in that ecosystem of English all the time. But when you're remote at home, you're not hearing English all around you. So I wonder, you know, are you seeing setbacks with kids who seem to be doing well?
I don't know if setback is the right way, but I think that the progress has changed, I guess, if I want to like spin it around for a positive response.
But I appreciate that.
Yeah, but no, this is true. It's hard to know progress when students are not necessarily engaging with the curriculum or engaging with others. And so we want to make sure that we are that we're meeting all of those language needs and that we're able to reach their language goals. And so it is, you know, we have to change the way that we're delivering and servicing our students. And that's going to be essential moving forward, as this has extended in New Hampshire until June.
Yeah. Yeah. We all kind of expected it last week, but still it was hard for parents and teachers and students to hear that. I want to ask everybody, but you first, Liz, are you still making home visits to some students? Are you still seeing anyone in person?
No, we are not allowed to make home visits at this time. But before, when remote learning initiated at the beginning of March, we were making home visits to deliver technology, to check in on the students, to let them know about bus runs for food. And so I think that that's also been challenging now as a teacher, is that I don't get to have that in-person connection with my students anymore.
Yeah, Martha, how about you? Any home visits at all for students who may have special needs, or students who, you know, who can't figure out how to make the iPad work?
It sounds very similar to what Liz said, in that our guidance counselors and even our principal have been running technology to families that are struggling with that, making sure people are getting their resources and things like that. But as far as it goes for me, no, we've not had any in-person contact.
Yeah, and I know in the beginning there was a little bit more of that, as Liz said. What about you, Eric? Is anybody seeing anyone face-to-face?
Very, very rarely. We occasionally see kids when they come into school to pick up materials, although very more often than not they would be staying in the vestibule, you know, and not coming into the main building. Had an incident the other day where I had a senior that we hadn't heard from for 3 or 4 days, and my dean of students was driving home and saw the student outside playing basketball. So he stopped and talked to him and explained that, you know, you're a senior, you can't just avoid this work. But on a regular basis, no, there really isn't any face-to-face any longer.
Well, it's great, Eric, that you at least, you know, call them or check up on them every couple days to see how they're doing. That's a service. Who helps you with that? Does everybody kind of have their list of people to call on? How do you organize that? Because that's a lot of kids.
Well, we've got this giant Google spreadsheet, one for 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, and as teachers have one-on-one interaction with students during the day, they will go in and notate that, yes, I have spoken to this student today, and we just gauge it that way.
Wow. How about you, Liz? How's that going at your school? Who helps you sort of stay in that one-on-one contact? How do you do it?
Yeah, actually, we're really fortunate at West High School because we have established a new advisory model that had begun last year. And so now every teacher is connected with 15 students or less every single day during the school year. But then also that has transferred into remote learning, where we have set up a Google Classroom with our advisory students, and we check in with them every day. And that is also considered our attendance for the day. But then we're also doing those like emotional check-ins with them, asking them how their work is coming, scheduling video calls to help them get organized. And so that has really helped to ensure that we don't go days without speaking to students.
Wow, checking in with them every day.
Every day.
Martha, how many students do you have in your fourth grade class? And are you checking or getting help checking, you know, every day or every other day?
I have 17 students in my classroom, and there's two other fourth grade classes. And the way we've kind of worked on projects, some of the other fourth grade teachers are having contact with my students as well, which is pretty fun. Once a week, we have a meeting with our administration, guidance, and special education. So we touch base with all of those people to see how everyone's doing. You know, is there anyone that's popped up on your radar? That kind of thing. So they're in contact with guidance counselors, if that's something typical. Even if it's not, you know, our guidance counselors are so loved throughout the building that kids are happy to see them any which way they get to. So, you know, a lot of it's just keeping a finger on the pulse, seeing if they're turning in assignments, things like that, reaching out, hey, good morning, how are you? You know, happy Monday, stuff like that. So we don't have as much like a formal way of recording it, but I think we're really so on the pulse with our students that, plus I have such a low classroom number with 17, which is awesome, that I feel like I really can keep track of, you know, I haven't heard from this person. Let's check in and make sure everything's okay. And sometimes they're like, oh, I went for a hike.
And you say, great, you're getting outside. So
yeah, great. great, that counts for science today.
Right, there you go, or phys ed or whatever. Well, coming up, we're going to talk with a teacher and a mother of four in the Lakes region, and she'll tell us how it's going for her. She's got a pretty busy household, and we'll start taking your questions and comments. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We're checking in with remote learning again today in the Exchange. exchange@nhpr.org is the email. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's a two-part special on remote learning. This hour, students in kindergarten through high school, and then at 10 o'clock, how colleges are trying to adapt. So if you're a student yourself, or a parent, or a teacher, how is remote learning going for you? What's working? What isn't? And what do you need? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Liz Kerwin, English learner teacher at Manchester West High School, Martha Dalrymple, fourth grade teacher at Deerfield Community School, and Eric Chase, principal at Woodsville High School. And joining us now with a parent's perspective is Courtney Lefebvre. She lives in Sandwich. She's a mom of four. She's a former teacher herself. Courtney, welcome to The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So first, tell us about your family. Courtney, who's at home trying to do remote learning?
So I'm at home with my four kids. The three oldest are elementary school age, fifth grade, third grade, and kindergarten. And I also have a four-year-old at home.
Wow, that's a busy house. So you used to teach first and second grade at New Hampton Community School, Courtney, from what I understand?
Yes.
So you've got that teacher background. And you used to homeschool your children. This was the first year you enrolled them in regular school. Now they're back home with you again. What's that been like for you, Courtney?
Pretty ironic.
Yeah.
It's challenging. Even with experience with homeschooling, even with the knowledge and training of a teacher, it's extremely difficult. For me, the kids are fine. They're happy. But for me, it's extremely difficult.
What is it that's difficult?
Trying to manage three separate classrooms in one house.
Tell us a little bit more about that. Yeah, go ahead, Courtney.
So the expectations for each child is very different. The older child can work more independently, but the two younger ones really need me sitting with them and figuring out Google Classroom. It took me 2 weeks to figure out Google Classroom. So now, hopefully over the next couple of weeks, I can teach them how to use it more independently. Luckily, our teachers kind of transitioned us into it and have been increasing the workload very slowly, which is helpful. But just trying to figure out what three separate people want me doing with my kids is very difficult and time consuming. And I'm
Absolutely.
Also trying to work from home. And my husband's a police officer, so he's still going to work, so he's not home. So it's kind of an unreasonable expectation that I'm going to be able to do all of this the way it's given to me.
Wow. So you've got your own job. Your husband is clearly, very busy as a police officer, and you've got four kids at home that you're trying to, you know, sit down with and work through Google Classrooms. You must just feel, Courtney, sometimes like, you know, forget it. Everybody just, you know, go play video games.
We have had a day or a few days where I've said, not today. We're just not going to do that today. And we go outside and we play, we go for walks. The kids are loving having this free time, and they're coming up with some pretty incredibly creative projects on their own.
Oh, like what?
So my oldest is very interested in space. So we have hundreds of books at home, fortunately. So she can pull from our own books at home, and she has taken to studying Saturn and all the moons of Saturn, and she enjoys writing, so she's writing these creative stories about imaginary creatures that live on the moons of Saturn.
Wow. So that's, you know, even if that's not on the direct curriculum that her teacher sent, that sounds pretty good to me.
It does.
Have you been using this time, Courtney, to teach your kids other, perhaps, non-academic skills?
Yes. And that's my priority, just as a mom, that our time together is spent staying connected with each other and taking care of ourselves, but also taking care of each other, making sure they're contributing to the household chores, and just doing activities that bring us joy together. This will be a time period that kids are going to remember forever, and I'm very aware of that when I make the choices that we do for each day, is what do I want them to remember from this time?
Wow.
And then choose accordingly.
Yeah, they will remember it for sure. So how do we respond as adults?
Right.
What advice do you have, Courtney, for other parents who are doing remote learning right now? Especially, you know, those like you who have, you know, a spouse working in a critical field and you're trying to do your own job and, you know, four kids, including a little one, I mean, 4 years old.
Right.
What advice do you have for other parents who are just ready to throw their hands up and say, forget it?
Yes. Communicate with your teachers and the other staff at your school. Here at Interlakes, our teachers have been wonderful that we can chat at the end of the week or even through email, and I can let them know, you know, here's what we actually did. Here are the books that we read. Here's the recipes that we did. Here are the experiments. Here's what the kids came up with. So having that freedom and the authority between the two of us, between the teacher and the parent, to be able to make choices about what's best for each individual child, not necessarily, you know, here's the curriculum that you were supposed to get done this week, but we're trying to make choices that are best for each child because each child is so different.
Well, Courtney, good luck to you, and thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
That's Courtney Lefebvre. She lives in Sandwich. She's a former teacher herself, and she's a mom of four. Our email for you to join us on remote learning. We're talking K through 12 this hour. Next hour, we'll talk about higher education. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, we've been talking a lot about how you're interacting with kids, how you're trying to support kids, how kids have been working their way through this. I also want to talk about how this has all affected teachers. And I've gotten a couple emails from teachers before the show about this. Here's one from a person who preferred not to give a name. This person says, I teach high school science and I was meeting with students virtually when we heard the news about doing this to June, this meaning the entire school year being remote, which was decided late last week. This person says, this is so emotionally draining. I have transitioned my teaching from teaching to more of wellness and counseling and damage control. I do not expect to get through my curriculum. My kids need me more as a mentor than a teacher. What teachers need is for administrators to acknowledge how hard this is for us. This person says, teachers are on the front line. We are sticking our fingers into a leaking dam and we have run out of fingers. And we are tiring. I ask that administrators ease up and realize we will not make it through our curriculum and that we need emotional support. And thank you to that person for writing. That's very moving, and we will definitely talk about that. Another email just came in from an anonymous teacher who says, I'm a teacher in the SAU 48 district. These guests seem to be living in a reality that most educators, administrators, and most definitely students are not. Remote learning stinks, this person says. It's stressful. There's too much screen time, too much pressure, too much work for everyone, especially for special education teachers. They are booked throughout the whole day and don't even have a moment to themselves for their own healthy mental state. They are drained. Everyone is trying their best, but for me, remote learning couldn't get higher than a C. I want to thank both of those teachers for writing in and to let you know that we heard from a lot of other teachers who were absolutely not happy with the way it's going. I want to hear from everybody, but Eric, you first, you're a principal. Are you hearing from some of your teachers that remote learning stinks?
Well, it's certainly not their favorite thing to do. I am acutely aware of how difficult it is. I have the advantage, I think, in that when I do stay home, and I do go in a couple of days a week, but when I do stay home, I sit and listen to my wife working with her students. She teaches grades 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, there may be 5 in there too. And Piermont teaches the math and the difficulty of running from class to class and having the kids, you know, you've got a classroom full of kids, you're trying to engage them in discussion, and you're just hearing crickets chirping in the background. I watch the stress on her. I've watched the stress on my other teachers. We know how difficult it is. I don't expect that my teachers are going to get through their curriculum, but what we have asked them to do is to take the key points of the curriculum, the real can't give it away competencies, and focus on those rather than the peripheral materials that we would add in under normal circumstances.
So you really have to just focus on the few core elements, Eric. That's what we got to do in this time.
That's what I believe, yes.
I'd like to hear from our teachers too. And Martha, you first, this teacher who just wrote says, you know, you guys all gave this experiment a B+. This teacher says can't get higher than a C. I myself, as a parent, you know, the teachers are working really, really hard. I hear from them. They are, you know, having to figure out the social emotional status of their students. They're still trying to present the curriculum. The teachers I've talked to are probably wouldn't give us a B+. What do you think, Martha?
You know, I definitely feel for this teacher who's writing this, and I think it's hard for all of us in different ways, and it totally depends on what age group you have and what you're teaching to. I think I'm really lucky to be teaching fourth grade because my students are at an age where they can read the directions and they know how to do a lot of it on their own because they're familiar with the technology from our use in school. But, you know, introducing Google Classroom to a kindergartner who is in the early learning stages of how to read is very different than saying, here's your Google Classroom assignment for the day to a fourth grader. And moving all the way up to a high school level, I feel for her. She probably has, you know, 100 students, and trying to get feedback to 100 students about their projects is hard to manage in a regular learning setting, let alone when you're trying to respond to Google comments for maybe 6 different blocks that you have throughout a week or something like that. So I feel for that. And I think that every teacher has a different challenge, very similar to during the regular school year, you know, oh, kindergarten's doing these really cute projects, but there's other aspects of kindergarten that's extremely difficult. So it's kind of one of those, the grass is always greener, but the grass is always, it's always harder in different settings too. So I feel for this teacher that's struggling with it, and I understand where she's coming from.
Yeah. And Liz, I did wonder, you know, it's great that Martha has 17 students, so she can really connect with them directly. But your average high school teacher has, you know, I don't know, 100 students, 150 students, if you're teaching, you know, 6 or 7 classes a day, and each class has 20 students. I'm not going to do the math on the air. But how do those teachers at the high school level, Liz, connect with all their students, make sure they're okay, and make sure they're at least getting some kind of education?
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. And in the EL, or in the English Learner Program at West High School, we have 125 students. And so between myself and one other teacher, we're also servicing those students beyond our classrooms. And so remote learning has not been easy. Like the grade that I assessed it in the beginning of the program was just because of our response to it, because of the community that has come together. But that doesn't mean that it's easy and that it does not come with challenges. I've gone through I've gone through all of my own emotional response to this. You know, I was deflated after the governor's response last week, even though it was anticipated, just because I was so hopeful that I would be able to see my students again before the end of the school year. And so it is different at different levels across education. And so I think that we are fortunate at my school specifically because in addition to our courses, where teachers do have 100 or more students that they see during the day, we also have that advisory model that has been established. And so it's nice because we're not just managing the 100 kids that we see within our classes, but we have a team of support where advisors are checking in with kids who might be in like my EL class and then like my colleague's civics class and their algebra course. And so that advisor is also getting information from that student that can help us as teachers. And I just think that it is emotionally draining, this process. And I watched a really helpful professional development webinar last week that allowed me to rethink my service model. And so I was going like, I woke up in the morning, I was answering emails, I was videoing throughout the day, I was prepping, grading, going until like 12 o'clock at night, and then waking up the next morning in like same process. And that is not a sustainable model. And like,
no, that is not, Liz.
No, we want to be there for our students. Like responding to an email at midnight is not necessary. And that's what I got from this webinar that I watched, where it's important that we establish times that we're going to be available, that we do practice flexibility, but that we create a system for ourselves that will ensure that we're going to be able to push through this until the end of the school year.
Well, I think all of us who are working at home are struggling with the boundary issue. You know, work is always there, so it's always there. So I definitely hear what you're saying. Let's take a call. Jennifer is calling in. Go ahead, Jennifer. You're on the air.
Good morning, Laura and guests.
Morning. Go ahead, Jennifer.
I teach at White Mountains Regional High School up in Whitefield and have a variety of very hands-on interactive classes, maple sugaring, floral design, and outdoor fitness. So that's been an adjustment to shifting things over to online learning. I do have to say I feel bad for the teachers that wrote in. Our district and our administration has been really supportive and gave us the gift early on of saying, you know, take it slow, do it well, less is more, focus on the real core ideas, like Eric was mentioning earlier.
So what is your advice, Jennifer, to teachers who are listening? And I think there are a lot of them who are really struggling and really feeling badly about this on a number of levels, both academic and social emotional. What's your advice, Jennifer? It's good to hear from you.
Thanks. I'm not sure as I'm in a position to give a lot of advice, but I think what I'm hearing about that connection with the students and recognizing that in the long run, being a support and a voice and just checking in with them frequently on how they're doing, how they're handling it. Do they need help? Do they need access? Do they need just a voice or an ear, listening ear? Is going to be the more important than, oh my gosh, do we get through all of our units? Because in the long run, how they are as people is going to be the more important piece than whether you're able to cover every content. We were just hitting our stride in my classes. All three of these classes are single semesters. So we'd had 6 weeks of in-person class and the kids had done a lot of work and we were just getting ready to say boil syrup and make more flower arrangements and that type of thing. And so I feel bad for them in that they're missing out on that. But in the long run, you know, being connected to the students and hearing about how their lives are, I think, and connecting with the parents as well. We've been encouraged to reach out and stay in touch with the families. So
how is the, you mentioned connection, how is the internet connection where you are? That's been a challenge that we've heard about from listeners.
That is the challenge. And I think it is quite a variety across our district. And they're working on getting access. I believe the Rotary donated some money to try to put up some hotspots for some of the kids that were identified as having limited or spotty internet. But yeah, I heard about one kid. He's got three younger siblings he's keeping track of, and he sits in the parking lot of McDonald's to try to log on to Google Classroom and get his work done, you know, versus the kids that maybe have the better access and don't have a lot of competition at home, you know, for the internet or the devices. Again, our district early on had us, you know, we have our list of students that we call each week, and we found out early on who had dependable internet access and who didn't, and tried to troubleshoot that right from the start.
So, Jennifer, it's good to hear from you, and good luck. I really appreciate
you
calling in today.
Thank you. It's fun to chat with you. This is a good program.
Take care. You can give us a call too, like Jennifer did, after a short break. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Coming up, we'll bring in another parental voice, a mother in Stratford who's doing remote education with her kids. If you are a teacher or a student or a parent, we really want to hear from you. We're talking about remote learning this hour on The Exchange. Coming up, stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're devoting 2 hours to remote learning. Right now, we're looking at younger students, kindergarten through high school. Then at 10 o'clock, we'll turn our attention to higher education. Exchange listeners, it's been great to hear from you. Keep your phone calls and emails coming in. We want your comments about how you would grade New Hampshire's experiment in remote learning. What's working? What isn't? What do you need? Again, our email exchange@nhpr.org. Comment on Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Liz Kerwin is with us. She's an English learner teacher at Manchester West High School. Martha Dalrymple, she's a fourth grade teacher at Deerfield Community School. And Eric Chase, he's a principal at Woodsville High School. And Eric, I want to ask you about leadership. We received many comments from teachers on our survey at nhpr.org and through email about how they want support from district leadership, principals, superintendents, and so forth. How are you providing leadership at this time?
Probably largely organizationally. When we had to get this started up, basically, administration had the weekend and maybe Monday to put together an overall plan to roll out to the teachers and then to try and get that plan up and running. I'm also very active. I'm in every single Google Classroom that my faculty has, so I have 72 different Google Classrooms to peruse around. I clearly don't get to them every day, but
it's a lot.
Check in on a regular basis. And we're having regular Google Meet meetings. The SAU administrative team meets twice a week in the afternoon just to go over the problems and try and smooth things out. But, the real job for me, I think, is to remove any of the impediments to teaching remotely that exist or any that I can have any kind of operational effect on.
And, Liz mentioned trying to just get a handle on how much more work it is to try to present this material remotely and check in with everybody remotely. She talked about answering emails at midnight. How about you, Eric? I mean, how much more extensive a job is this as a school leader for you?
Well, it's extensive in its scope. There are large blocks of very quiet time, though. I will say that. It's always been a struggle for me not to answer emails at 10 o'clock at night, and that's the downside of owning a smartphone. but I do recommend to my staff that they, we're done school at 3. You really shouldn't be working much past 5. Keep that boundary between home and work when there is no boundary between home and work.
Yeah. It's hard to do. Well, we did hear from teachers who were happy with the leadership that they got in their districts. Jessica in Salem wrote, Salem School District is doing an amazing job with distance learning. My son's teacher is required to Zoom with the class weekly, but he is meeting with them daily, as well as one-on-one via Zoom weekly. Keeping the kids in direct contact with teachers and classmates is beyond helpful, Jessica says. Kudos to the teachers and staff. So that's Jessica in Salem. Nicole in Durham also wrote, she says, as a parent and a teacher, I have found it difficult to balance the educational responsibilities of both roles. Nicole says local education leaders have been wonderful in their response to the psychological impacts of this pandemic. She says kids are beginning to get into a groove and are feeling more responsible, accomplished, and generally in good spirits. And then Robin in Brookline writes, my local officials are my school administrators in Nashua. I think they're doing a fabulous job trying to accommodate the students with supplying technology and supporting the teachers with the flexibility they need right now to figure out remote learning. Also the fact that they're continuing to pay our hourly employees, such as secretaries and food service workers. So there's some comments from listeners from our survey and from email about how they feel their districts have responded. We got an email that just came in from Richard Kate, who is principal at Simon School in Keene. Richard says, although perhaps the best that we can do under the circumstances, we should not foster the illusion that remote learning is in any way comparable to real school. Richard says, I recently surveyed my teachers asking what percent of normal learning growth remote learning has provided. The almost universal response was in the 40 to 50% range. It was also universally expressed that children with learning challenges and those with home lives who were the most compromised suffered a much greater impact, with many regressing significantly. Richard, thank you so much for writing from Keene. And Liz, what do you think about what Richard says?
Yeah, I think that it's really important that we build relationships with our students and our families so that we can identify those kids who do have compromised home situations. I work with multiple students who have families of 10 or larger. And so I need to be really cognizant of how I'm engaging with my students when I know that they're sharing technology, when I know that they're wearing multiple hats. Like our students in high school function as parents, they function as mentors, they have jobs to support their families at, you know, with some students. And so I need to make sure that I'm going to be flexible working with those students who I know need additional support, who I know need one-on-one video calling, and that, you know, I don't, and that we change the way that we consider progress and regression. If we understand remote learning on the same scope that we do traditional learning in a classroom, it is not, and it's true, the principal said it very well, that it's not, we can't say that it's the same. And so we also need to rethink what is progress going to look like in remote learning, and how can we foster that to continue? And that means that we need to really reconsider our traditional curriculum and maybe make it more student-centered and really allow students to investigate their own learning rather than giving them static assignments where they may not be learning and just filling in the gaps.
Mm. Well, I want to bring another parental voice into our conversation. With us now on the line is Jessica Bowen. She's a mother in Stratford. She's doing remote education with her kids. And Jessica, welcome. First, please just tell us about your own home situation, who you are trying to work with in terms of remote learning.
Well, I am trying to work with a fourth grader who has an IEP and a kindergartner who doesn't understand why he has to do schoolwork during this extended vacation, as he calls it.
Yeah. I've heard teenagers call it coronacation. So, I completely understand where you're coming from. So your 10-year-old has an IEP. That's an individualized education plan. We did a whole program on this a couple weeks ago. But how is your school trying to continue to deliver that IEP for your child?
I have been very lucky in working with my children's teachers. We do live in a small town, and it's a small school. The kindergarten class is three kids. The fourth grade class is actually a third and fourth grade classroom. Because it's so small, it is mixed. But our teachers have the ability to meet with the kids one-on-one if they need to. My biggest concern with my 10-year-old was regression, because we've made a lot of progress with him. He does have speech issues. He's not formally diagnosed with anything besides ADHD. He's kind of our question mark, as we call it, and we're not sure why he has the developmental delays that he does. But it is kind of serious for him because, you know, he has a hard time zipping up his jacket still and things like that, and he just turned 10. So for him, regression was really my worry. But the school has worked very good with us. I think I am on our second or third restructured of his assignments, because at first we were doing too much. Like, as a parent, nobody said you're not supposed to be working with the kids more than 3 hours per day. Mm. So when we started, I was working with him 3 to 4 hours, and we fell behind very quickly. And then we put his specials in. He has OT. He has speech. He has Title I. Most of his day right now is actually Zooms, and it's specials. But to me, the specials are more important right now, because my main concern isn't so much as can he divide, can he, you know, add three-digit numbers. My concern is, are we going to lose the progress we made in speech?
Wow. Yeah, and that's a message that I've heard throughout the hour. People are concerned about, you know, never mind progress, regression. Just last question for you, Jessica, if I could please. What advice do you have for other parents who are doing this right now?
I asked around myself, and I'm like, am I having a typical experience? And the answer widely came back, no. But I think that comes largely in fact that if something isn't for working for me, I am not going to sit back and continue to struggle. I'm going to go to the teacher and be like, hey, this isn't working. And I think as parents, when they rolled this out, I understand they rolled it out and they weren't given much time.
No, it was
but
very
as,
quick.
As parents, we're not getting information back. We're not being told you shouldn't be working with your kindergartner more than an hour a day. Nobody is coming back to us and saying, hey, here's some tips. Here's some things. This is the baseline of what we need you to do. So at the end of the semester, if it comes down to a pass and fail grade, they have enough work so they pass. Nobody is coming back to us and being like, this is what we need from you. And I think
wow.
a lot of parents could kind of appreciate that more with, in the bare minimum, this is what we need you to do.
Jessica, profound words, and it sounds like you need more communication to parents as to what the expectations are. I'm going to let you go now, but I hope we can talk again because this is a really interesting topic, and I know you have a background in education as well.
Yes.
For now, though, Jessica, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That's Jessica Bowen. She's a mother in Stratford with a background in education, talking about how she has been trying to work with her two sons. And all of you, I want to close out with an email from Nicole, also just expressing some of this parental frustration and confusion. Nicole says, my 15-year-old high school freshman has turned into a teenage nocturnal creature despite our best efforts to prevent this. My husband and I are both working regular hours from home. We need our sleep and cannot monitor him during the evenings once we go to sleep. He's a good kid, but feelings of bad parenting are a bit overwhelming. Trying really hard to cut us all some slack with these unusual circumstances, but I can't help think we are doing something wrong. Nicole, I hear you. I understand what you're feeling. What do you think, Liz? You teach at a high school. Mm-hmm. What would you say to Nicole?
You know, it's so hard because I'm seeing the same behaviors with my students. Like when I schedule my day, I know in the morning I can respond to emails and do planning because kids start to engage and wake up like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And in a typical school day, our school day ends at 2:53. And so, you know, I've had to really change my schedule as well to make sure that I'm also available during pockets of times when I know that I can reach students. And so when I ask the kids, when I tell them that, you know, sleeping in until 2 p.m. is not healthy and like you need to create a schedule, some of the students are responding that like now that their families are either working more because they're in a critical area or because they picked up a second job at Market Basket because nobody wants to work in a high risk area. They're actually functioning as the parent. And so like they're putting the babies to bed, they're like waking up and feeding the kids. And so, and then, you know, I just think that we do need to have relationships with our students so that we know what their home lives are like and how we can adjust our expectations or but still make rigorous expectations for them. But I guess just, you know, creating a schedule for ourselves and then asking students to create a schedule for themselves as well, just to make sure that we do have a routine as this continues through June.
Well, Liz, it's been good to talk to you. Good luck as you make your way through this. We really appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Liz Kerwin, English learner teacher at Manchester West High School. Martha, good luck to you, too, with those fourth graders at Deerfield Community School. Thank you for being with us, Martha.
Thank you.
That's Martha Dalrymple. Again, she teaches fourth grade in Deerfield. And Eric Chase, it was good to talk to you. And good luck to you and your school community. We really appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
That's Eric Chase. He's a principal at Woodsville High School. Now, stay with us for a second hour of The Exchange. We're going to look at higher education and all the adjustments there. That's coming up in hour two of The Exchange. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.